From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. North Carolina state legislators have until January 29th, a little more than a week, to redraw congressional districts. That deadline comes from a ruling earlier this month by a three-judge panel that found North Carolina's congressional districts to be unconstitutional because they were so gerrymandered. They violated the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution by favoring one political party over another. In other words, the judges concluded the districts are unconstitutional because they are partisan gerrymanders. According to The Atlantic, this decision marks the first time a federal court has ever struck down a redistricting plan as a partisan gerrymander. The Associated Press reports the plaintiffs in the North Carolina lawsuit filed briefs yesterday with Chief Justice John Roberts. They're responding to GOP legislative leaders' request for Roberts to delay enforcement of the ruling. Today, we're going to explore redistricting reform, what that really means through a nonpartisan lens, and why it's important. We'll also find out how partisan gerrymandering impacts the workings of a democracy. As our guide on this exploration today, I'm so pleased to introduce Tom Ross, president of the Volcker Alliance, a nonpartisan nonprofit dedicated to the effective execution of public policies and rebuilding public trust in government. He is also president emeritus of the 17-campus University of North Carolina system. Tom Ross serves as the Sanford Distinguished Fellow in Public Policy at Duke University. Before his time as UNC system president, Tom Ross was president of Davison College. He's served as a superior court judge, and he's worked as an assistant professor of public law and government at UNC Chapel Hill School of Government. He is in Wilmington on this Thursday to speak tonight at UNCW about redistricting reform, 6:30 at Lumina Theater. And I am thrilled to welcome him today to our discussion. Tom Ross, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you very much, Rachel. It's an honor to be here, and I look forward to our discussion.
We're inviting you to join the conversation. Are you an active participant in the democratic system? Do you vote in all the elections? Have you lost interest or faith in the process? Give us a call today and tell us about it during this live Thursday discussion. You can reach us at 910-343-1138 or by email at coastline@whqr.org. Tom Ross, in a speech that you delivered at Duke University the day after you appeared on our program in 2016 to talk about your nonpartisan redistricting experiment, you said this, and I'm quoting, "In my view, if we take our democracy for granted and do not do everything possible to nurture and protect it, it can fail. In fact," you said, "I believe a case can be made that our democracy is, at this very moment, inching towards failure. If we do not recognize this fact or choose to ignore the situation in which we find ourselves, we do so at our peril." That was a little more than a year ago. What exactly did you mean by failure of our democracy?
Well, I think when you did your introduction and you were asking some questions to potential callers and to the listeners about, do you feel you've lost faith in the system? Do you feel your vote doesn't matter? To the extent that people in a democracy don't believe it's working, don't participate in it, then and lose faith in it, then that is the beginning of the end of a democracy. A democracy depends on people's involvement. It depends on their participation. Their voices must be heard. To the extent their voices are not heard, it's no longer a democracy. I stand by what I said a year ago. I still think we are in real jeopardy in this country of potentially losing our democracy. We all take it for granted because it's been here for over 200 years and we think, well, it's the best system there is, and it is. But it can fail just as other countries' forms of government fail. Ours can too if we don't pay attention to it, take care of it, treasure it, and do what we can to be sure it's working at its highest possible level.
Specifically, what signs were you referring to a little more than a year ago and today that the democracy is failing? You actually use the term broken democracy as well.
Yeah.
What's the evidence of that?
Well, in the 2016 election, which I think most people's view of that election was it was highly contentious, highly contested, and yet less than half of the eligible voters in this country took the time to vote. So when you're in a democracy and less than half the people are the ones that are going to the polls, we see this all the time. You know, we have turnouts in the teens when we're doing second primaries or when we're doing sometimes municipal elections or primaries. It's hard to call that a democracy when that few people are taking an interest in going to vote. You know, I think that's one sign. Another sign is there was a poll done that I think I may have even quoted in that speech, but I've certainly used it since, in which American citizens were asked whether they trusted their government most of the time or all of the time. And 39% said they did 5 years ago. Now that's down to 19%. So there's an erosion of people's trust in government, their confidence in the democracy. And again, when you lose that, you're going to eventually lose that form of government because people don't trust it or care about it anymore.
Why do you think the public is losing faith in the way government functions?
Their ability to influence the democracy is in the decline. You know, their vote doesn't matter in many instances where you've had sharply gerrymandered districts. No matter which party you're in, you're left out if you're in one of those districts, if you're not the party that's controlling. And even if you are the party that if you're part of that party, you know, your vote won't matter in the general election if you don't like the particular candidate that gets nominated. If you're an independent and a third of the voters in this state are registered unaffiliated, if you're one of those independents, your vote really doesn't matter much at all because the decision on who your representative is going to be is decided in the primary. So if you're one of those voters, you feel left out. You feel like your voice can't be heard, and you're not going to have an effective democracy in that situation. So that's why I think gerrymandering and fixing gerrymandering and the way we do redistricting is so critical to the preservation of democracy.
Let's talk about why this is coming up in the courts now, because whenever we talk about partisan gerrymandering, we always hear from people who say, well, it's interesting that you're noticing it now because the Democrats engaged heavily in that back in the day when they held majorities in North Carolina. What do you say to that?
Well, I'll say this tonight and I say it all the time, which is I know who is responsible for gerrymandering. I can tell you it's the Democrats. And the Republicans. They're both guilty. They're both guilty. And I spent 17 years as a judge, so I know guilty when I see it. And, you know, you're exactly right. The Democrats did it. The Republicans did it. We have legislators that are in Raleigh today in both parties that have taken different positions on this issue. One position when they're in power and a different position when they're out of power. And so it is and the other thing I will say is we've had litigation based, you know, we do this every 10 years. So after the 2010 census, we're still in litigation. It's now 2018. But after the 1990 and the 2000 census, we still had litigation. We had litigation all the way up to the end of the decade. And that's expensive for the state. But more importantly, it creates a great deal of uncertainty for voters. They don't know who represents them because it gets changed all the time.
Was that litigation in the 90s about partisan gerrymandering? Because as we've heard, courts have been reluctant to take on partisan gerrymandering cases. They took on a racial gerrymandering case and said that the Republicans had, with surgical precision, kind of removed the African-American vote from right. mattering in those districts that were ruled unconstitutional. Why is partisan gerrymandering different, and why has it taken until now to come up in a legal situation?
Right. I mean, I think, yes, the decade of the 90s and the decade of 2000 to 2010 were most of the cases were primarily about racial gerrymandering. You know, you've and that's been true in this decade as well. It's right. only recently that we've seen the partisan gerrymandering argument be made. And look, there's a long history in our country of the courts avoiding so-called political questions. And so
Why?
Because it's important to the separation of powers. It's important that the executive branch be able to do its business without interference from the legislature and without interference from the courts. The legislature needs to be able to do their business without interference from the other branches. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, there are gray areas between the executive and the legislative and the executive and the judicial and between all three branches. And the courts have had a sometimes difficult time completely staying out of political questions. So one example that is part of the whole history of gerrymandering is the requirement of redistricting at all. You know, we went through the first part of the last century, we went through decades without drawing districts. And then along comes the Supreme Court in Baker versus Carr in 1961 and says, no, population has to be equal. So you've got to redraw every 10 years to get as close as possible to equal number of people in each district. And we spent a lot of time litigating what equal number of people meant. And then we moved to racial gerrymandering, and now it looks like we may move into some time litigating partisan gerrymandering.
And why are parties interested in racial gerrymandering?
Well, I think, you know, it's been an interesting history. There are some people, including some members of the Supreme Court, that have stated that they think racial gerrymandering is now become simply a proxy for partisan gerrymandering. But I think we went through a history in this country in which African Americans were initially denied the right to vote, and then I think gerrymandering was used as a method of either diluting their vote or by packing or cracking, two terms that are often used for redistricting. And we can talk more about this after the break, but I think the key is that it was out of the Voting Rights Act that really led to a lot of that litigation.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. It's a look at redistricting in North Carolina and why partisan gerrymandering is starting to face some serious legal challenges. We're also exploring the case for a nonpartisan redistricting process. Tom Ross, president of the Volcker Alliance and former president of the UNC system, is with us today and answering your questions. You can call us on this Thursday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today we're exploring how partisan redistricting impacts the democratic process beyond the obvious, and how a nonpartisan redistricting process might look in North Carolina. Tom Ross, President Emeritus of the University of North Carolina System and current president of the Volcker Alliance, a nonpartisan nonprofit, is with us today to answer your questions. There are two ways to get your question in on this Thursday. You can either call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. And Tom Ross, just before we went to break, you were kind of explaining the history of gerrymandering in the court system, how racial gerrymandering started to come under a microscope. And tell us why partisan, and you also said that I think Judge Clarence Thomas was one of the Supreme Court justices to say racial gerrymandering is really just a proxy for partisan gerrymandering. Why is partisan gerrymandering itself now under a microscope?
Well, I think it's, again, the history is a little bit that the efforts before to bring it up, and there have been efforts, the courts have basically said these are political questions and we're not going to get involved. But part of the reason they didn't want to get involved was, how do you draw the line? You know, all gerrymandering is going to have some partisanship involved in it. So what becomes extreme gerrymandering? I think that's really the question. And so a case was handed down in Wisconsin that used a test called the efficiency gap to try to objectively show extreme gerrymandering. And that case has made its way to the United States Supreme Court.
And the efficiency gap is actually a mathematical formula.
It is
developed by Nicholas Stephanopoulos
at the University of Chicago. And it is a way of showing essentially wasted votes, you know, that if you gerrymander too much, you're wasting a lot of votes. That is, people's votes are not, don't count anymore. They're being wasted.
Right.
So that was, for the first time, really an objective measure of what's too much gerrymandering. And so that case is made to the Supreme Court. Same time, there are cases pending in other states, including North Carolina, recently filed, by the way, in North Carolina. But in Maryland, there's been a longer pending case brought by Republicans against a Democratic gerrymander, interestingly. That case is now before the Supreme Court as well. The North Carolina case was filed after the congressional districts were first thrown out for racial gerrymandering and then ultimately approved the maps drawn by the legislature the second time around in 2016. There was then a case brought on partisan gerrymandering in North Carolina. That case was decided by a three-judge panel last year, again, finding that the congressional districts were unconstitutional because of partisan gerrymandering, not racial gerrymandering. And that case is in an interesting point right now, which is the judges have ordered that the legislature draw new districts. They've denied a stay. There is a motion pending before the United States Supreme Court, before the Chief Justice, for a stay. If the Chief Justice grants the stay, the implementation of the remedy will not go into effect until the case is appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Meaning the deadline for those new maps,
right.
It gets pushed out.
It gets pushed out until the case is decided by the Supreme Court. Because it's a three-judge panel, it goes directly to the Supreme Court. So they could take it and try to do it this term or wait and see how the other cases come out and then send it back to for further hearing. But they may also deny the stay and allow the election process to require new maps and so forth. And I don't know what they'll do.
Do you think that we're likely to get some?
We'll get a ruling quickly from the Chief Justice, I suspect, on that. And then we'll know whether they're going to take the case this term or whether they're going to wait until next term to take it. And so we'll get some decisions relatively quickly, I think. But the dilemma, of course, for the courts is, you know, you now have will be the fourth election held under new districts, actually the third election held under these, the 2012, 2014, 16, no, 18, it'd be four. Four elections held under these districts, and the first three elections were all declared unconstitutional, right, the districts, and this one now has been declared unconstitutional. So if you go forward with the existing districts, you're essentially – eight out of the 10 possible elections, four out of the possible 5-10 elections in this 10-year period would be under unconstitutional districts, which seems unfair to the voters. So I think it's a tough dilemma for the courts to put this off and not go forward with new districts. On the other hand, time is short. They got two cases pending. Who knows what they'll do?
And up again, juxtaposed against those two cases, the Wisconsin and Maryland cases, the plaintiffs in the North Carolina case, Common Cause and League of Women Voters, argue that because the Republicans openly say that they used criteria for the 2016 map, saying their goal was to retain their 10-3 advantage within the congressional delegation, that alone means their argument. However the Supreme Court rules on Wisconsin and Maryland, this three-judge panel decision is likely to be upheld. What do you think about that?
I think that, you know, the evidence in the case that the reason behind the districts, the way the districts were drawn, was in part partisanship is true. I don't think anybody on either side denies that. The question is whether partisanship can be found to be unconstitutional. I think that's the real question, and that we don't know the answer to. That is what the Wisconsin and Maryland cases are all about. We'll get a decision probably in June on those. It's possible they'll bring the North Carolina case up and consider it too. I hope they do, because it has a different way of looking at whether it's extreme gerrymandering, a different test, if you will. And I think that would give the court the ability to look at multiple ways of objective ways of testing for extreme gerrymandering.
And in just a couple of minutes, I want to get into the work that you've done with mathematician Jonathan Mattingly at Duke University and how he kind of, with his students, worked on running some mathematic models.
Yep.
to sort of show the fairness or the likelihood of the outcome that the GOP has engineered. But first, you're listening to Coastline. It's an exploration of the case for nonpartisan redistricting and the challenges that North Carolina is facing over partisan gerrymandering. Answering your questions on this Thursday, Tom Ross, he's the former president of the UNC system and the current president of the Volcker Alliance in New York, a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization dedicated in part to rebuilding public trust in government. And we want to hear from you. How do you view North Carolina's challenges over partisan gerrymandering? You can call us during this live Thursday edition at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Churchill from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Ross. What a pleasure to have you in the Port City. Thank you for coming to visit.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
I note that, you know, low voter turnout, which unfortunately Wilmington has suffered from for municipal elections for many, many years, ends up making it very easy to own the entire process by special interests. I regard it as anathema to democracy that elected officials should ever be allowed to choose their voters. It just flies in the face of reason and logic. So how do you feel about declaring a holiday and mandating the vote? And aside, sort of corollary to that, how would term limits help to exclude gerrymandering from the political process?
Both good questions. Let me start with the first one about declaring a holiday. And, I think anything we can do to encourage people to vote, we should do it. I'm a proponent of early voting, of a holiday, of weekend voting, making it easy for people to cast their ballot while also being sure that the process is secure. And I think those are the important principles we ought to use to try to make the vote as easy as possible for our residents. We want participation in democracy at the highest possible level because that's what makes democracy work. So that's number one. Number two, with regard to your second question of whether term limits would make a difference, I'm ambivalent a bit about term limits, frankly, because I've seen in other states that have them a loss of real expertise sometimes in elected political bodies that they really depend on history and they depend on knowing issues deeply if they're going to be successful. And so people rotating in and out, I think, sometimes can be a detriment to democracy as much as it can be a positive. I do think that there are better ways to fix democracy than term limits. I think focusing on fixing gerrymandering, I wish there was something we could do about campaign finance laws as well. That, unfortunately, has got to come more from the courts than from the people unless we do a federal constitutional amendment. But I think we can, as citizens, do something about gerrymandering, and I think that's where we ought to start.
Churchill, thank you so much for that call. We have an email from Jim. He says, I voted in every election, primary, school board, and others, every year since 1976. We'll continue to do so because it is almost a case of voting for the lesser of two evils. With carrier politicians, Jim writes, because of the lack of term limits, the revolving door of former politicians becoming lobbyists, and the ownership of the federal and state governments by corporate interests, I've come to one conclusion. The only elections that really matter are local. Jim says, I had hope when I was in my 20s and 30s. Now pushing 60, I have lost all hope. Tom Ross.
Jim, don't lose all hope. people who vote as regularly as you have are the backbone of democracy. And if you lose hope, then we're going to lose democracy. So please don't lose hope. It is difficult to see sometimes the gridlock that we face and, the fact that democracy doesn't work like we want it to. Local elections are very important because, the local political bodies are the ones that do the things that are, probably most affect your daily life. But believe me, and I know that state and federal governments also play a big role in our lives, and we need them to play a big role in our lives. That's what makes a democratic society work. So we've got to figure out how to make democracy work better, not give up hope on it.
Good answer. Thank you so much, Jim, for that email. You're listening to Coastline. That's Tom Ross, former UNC system president and current president of the Volcker Alliance in New York, a nonpartisan, nonprofit group dedicated to partly rebuilding public trust in government. You can reach us during this live Thursday edition and ask Tom Ross a question by calling us at 910-343-1138 or emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. George from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. I still have faith in the system. I voted in every election since I was 18 years old. I worked in campaigns in the past, even being deputy director of communications for a congressional campaign. But I'm an independent now. I've kind of turned my back on both parties because of just their blood sport bad behavior, for want of a better term. The gerrymandering on both parties is one egregious example of that. I'd like to hear from both of you what solutions you see that are maybe not ideal, but workable to begin to change this so that more people of all different classes and genders and races feel they have at least a reasonable chance to have their voice heard in the making of public policy.
Well, George, what a perfect segue into the nonpartisan redistrict experiment that Tom Ross conducted more than a year ago now. So, Tom Ross, explain this experiment that you undertook and how that played out. Thanks so much for your call, George.
Happy to. Thank you. And, George, you know, I think your question is a really good one, which is what can we do to make things better? And we tried an experiment at Duke when I first started working over there a little bit after I left the university. And what we did was simulate what it would be like to draw congressional districts using nonpartisan criteria. And by that, I mean not looking at voting history, not looking at party registration, but simply drawing the districts in a way that comply with federal law and that are as compact as possible. And frankly, that consider communities of interest, you know, where we have common interest. So to do that simulation, I went out and recruited 10 judges. Five of those judges had been Chief Justice of the North Carolina Supreme Court. There was another that had been an Associate Justice. Two had been on the Court of Appeals and two trial judges. Five of those 10 had run for office as a Democrat, and five had run for office as Republicans. We were very intentional about getting a bipartisan group. We then went through a process of being sure the judges were well educated on the law and that had all the information they needed to draw districts. And we asked them to use the criteria that are in a bill that's been introduced in the state house calling for nonpartisan redistricting, to get rid of partisan gerrymandering. So we asked them to use that criteria of using no political history of voting and no party registration information to draw districts. In a day, the judges, we broke them into two groups, and they asked each group to draw a map. We gave them a software program and somebody that knew how to use that, and it was a good computer person, and we gave them each a lawyer to help them stay within the law. And by the end of the day, both groups had drawn maps. We then tested those maps against the software that's used in the legislative building, brought them back, and made the judges choose between the two, as a commission would have to do. And they did select a map. And, you know, we didn't do any political analysis of what they were doing before they did it. So they had no idea how it was going to come out.
In terms of political affiliation.
In terms of what the outcome
the
might be,
right.
And what the political affiliation of the voters might be. And so, as we all know, in the 2016 election, there were 10 Republicans and 3 Democrats elected. And if you look at the vote cast, I believe it was about 53% of the public cast their vote for a Republican candidate and 47% for a Democratic candidate. So if you apply some basic math to that, 53% of 13, that's the number of representatives we have, comes out to a little less than 7. And so what should be based on the overall vote of the public, you should come out with about a 7-6 split. When we did a political analysis of the map that the judges had drawn based on voting history, those districts would have produced 6 leaning Republican districts, 4 leaning Democratic districts, and 3 toss-ups. So pretty close to that 7-6 division. So we think that the judges proved that there's a better way, that you can use nonpartisan criteria draw good districts that are less gerrymandered and that produce more competitive races. And I think that is when you have more competitive races, that's a good thing, because that means people are going to be more engaged. Voters are going to be more engaged. Their vote's going to matter. And it's going to, I think, over time, re-energize people to participating in democracy and will help us make our democracy work better. So that's we learned a lot from that experiment. Since then, we've created a new organization called North Carolinians for Redistricting Reform. It's a bipartisan group. You know, we have a board that's about equal Democrat and Republicans. And what we want to do is educate the public and encourage policymakers to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot that would require nonpartisan criteria for redistricting.
Tom Ross, this may seem like a silly question, an obvious question. You talked about making districts more competitive and the fact that that will ultimately probably engage voters more because they'll feel like their vote matters. What does that do to accountability on the part of politicians? How does that change the way government functions?
Well, I think it will make politicians more accountable. And here's why. You know, in the last congressional election in North Carolina, I don't remember the exact number, but a large majority, I think somewhere around 10 of the districts, the winner had 60% of the vote. So they were virtually guaranteed of election, right? Once they got through the primary, they were going to win.
Yeah.
So who do they listen to? Well, they only listen to the voters in their primary that they think will get them the nomination. The rest of us, they're not so interested in what we have to say. And that creates an environment in which there's very little accountability. And I think closer districts where they have to pay attention to all the voters, that will make politicians more accountable.
Does that also contribute to political extremism? We've become so much more divided, it seems. And I'll let you answer that question when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM, talking about partisan gerrymandering, its effects on public trust and a working democracy. Tom Ross, president of the Volcker Alliance, is with us today, and he's answering your questions about redistricting reform during this live Thursday discussion. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back, we're going to hear from Frank from Hampstead. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're learning today about how partisan gerrymandering has evolved, how it affects government function and public trust in government, and how states, North Carolina in particular, might approach nonpartisan redistricting. Tom Ross is our guest today. He's the former president of the 17-campus UNC system, the current president of the Volcker Alliance, a nonpartisan nonprofit organization dedicated in part to increasing public trust in government. This is the last segment, so you have just a few minutes left to get your question in during the live Thursday edition by either calling us at 910-343-1138 or emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. Tom Ross, just before we went to break, I asked you about the effects of partisan gerrymandering. You've certainly talked about disenfranchising voters, and we've heard from voters who've lost hope and trust in their government function. How does partisan gerrymandering affect the political dialogue?
Well, I think there are people who believe, and I think they're right, that over time in a gerrymandered system, that the politicians have to listen to the people in the primary, their own party. And so they have to appeal to the people in their party that are going to get them the nomination. Their risk, therefore, when they're in office and doing policymaking, their risk is that they're attacked from people who are more extreme than they are. We have a new word now we've used in America called primaried, and that is when you have somebody who intentionally is put up against you in a primary because you're not extreme enough for them. We see that in both parties. So it over time, there are people who believe that it has driven politics further to the extreme and made compromise, which is not a dirty word. Compromise is what solutions to problems are all about, because our problems are tough and hard and they require compromise. It makes it harder to do compromise when your challenge is coming from the extreme. And so as a politician, if you want to get reelected, you have to appeal to the people that aren't interested in compromise. They're interested in only their view. So I think that's the risk we've run, and I think that's part of what contributes to gridlock. It's part of what makes it hard for us to find solutions to problems that the man and woman on the street could solve probably pretty quickly if they sat down and worked together. But the politicians are having trouble sitting down and working together.
North Carolina is still pretty even in terms of parties as of this month, January 2018. There are slightly more unaffiliated voters in North Carolina than there are Republican voters. Democrats are the most represented at 2.6 million. There are 2,065,000 registered Republicans, and unaffiliated voters are close to 2.1 million. What does this rise of unaffiliated voters mean to you?
It's a sign of, I think, frustration with both parties, that both parties have pushed so far in the two directions that they no longer represent those in the minds of those people who the 2.1 million people that are now unaffiliated. They don't feel represented by a party anymore. I think there has been some decline in America in party politics in terms of the influence of parties anyway. And this is part of why fixing gerrymandering is so critically important. You've just made the case that a third of North Carolinians may well be left out of the process because they register unaffiliated. Because if they're in a highly partisan gerrymandered district, that primary determines the outcome. And then come general election, their vote just doesn't matter. And so I think we've got to get back to a system that allows all votes to matter. To really have to be heard so that those voters feel like it's worth engaging in democracy.
What's the incentive for politicians to embrace a nonpartisan process? I mean, this has come up in the General Assembly a few times over the course of history, and it's never gotten all the way through.
It's come up many times for many years. I think it's simple. If politicians care about democracy and our form of government, if politicians care about solving problems in our state and country, if politicians care about the people they represent, then they want a system that works. This one with partisan gerrymandering doesn't work. And there are people on both sides of the aisle, prominent Republicans, prominent Democrats, that strongly believe we need to fix this system. And that's what we've got to do, I think. And I think politicians hopefully will come to realize that this is important to the future of our state. It's more than just who's in control today. It's about making good decisions for our future as a state and as a nation. And so I hope that we can all come together as North Carolinians and figure out a solution that works for our state and works for the nation.
You're talking about members of the public who obviously have an interest in a real exchange of ideas, and then politicians. And there are some politicians who are true public servants. There are a lot of politicians, I'm sorry, forgive me, who have become part of the partisan machine, whose affiliation is to the party, to the money that comes from the party, to ensuring the next term. How do you differentiate between public servants and people who are part of the political machine?
Well, I think, you know, to me, a public servant is someone who puts the public first, and who puts the good of our state and our country ahead of their own political career and their own political views. You know, I work for a man now, Paul Volcker, who I think exemplifies the kind of courage that you have to have in public service to be great. I think we have examples in both parties that have done that. In North Carolina, you know, we have former governors of both parties that are very supportive of this change that we're trying to make happen. You know, I don't think there's a living Chief Justice in this state that doesn't support this approach. So there are a lot of current and former politicians that believe this needs to be fixed. And I admire people who are consistent. And, you know, there are people that Republicans that introduced bills back in the 80s that have stuck by their guns to believe this is the right thing to do. There are Democrats that were in favor of it in the old days when they were in control and have stuck by their guns. But as I said earlier, there are also politicians on both sides of the aisle that took one position when they were out of power, and now they take a different one when they're in power.
But the majority of Democrats and Republicans signed on to their political affiliation before they signed on to public service.
That's true. But, you know, if you look at the polls of people who identify as Democrats, identify as Republicans, or identify as independents, all three groups independently favor nonpartisan redistricting because they want their voices heard. And I think they also want problems solved. You know, they expect government to work and to work effectively, and they expect government to solve problems. And I think increasingly they realize that democracy has to work in order to hold voters, to hold politicians accountable so that they will, in fact, solve problems.
You're listening to Coastline. We have Tom Ross, former UNC System president and current president of the Volcker Alliance in New York, a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization dedicated to rebuilding public trust in government. Just a few minutes left to get your question in during this live Thursday discussion. You can call us, 910-343-1138. You can email us at coastline@whqr.org. Dan from Wilmington writes, "The entire idea of manipulating district lines to favor one class or party is abhorrent and deserves no place in a country with free and fair elections. Why do we allow gerrymandering to continue to exist?"
Dan, I can give you the email addresses of the justices on the Supreme Court, and hopefully you'll ask that question of them, because I think it's a really good and important question. You know, it is the nature of democracy, by the way, is political, right? It is a political system. So there's always going to be some level of politics. I think gerrymandering is really not just about party politics and not just about politics in a democracy. It really is extreme when it's done the way it is today, using computers so effectively to really fix the situation where the politicians are picking their own voters, and the voters no longer get to pick the politicians. And that is a recipe for failure of democracy. And so you're right, it has no place. And I think what we have to do as citizens is make it clear that we don't want to accept that any longer, that we want to change this way of doing business so that we can preserve our democracy and make it work for us.
You've said that partisan gerrymandering has actually become a technological arms race in a way.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, I confess to having been part of gerrymandering myself years and years ago when I was more partisan and when, you know, but we, in those days we did it on a legal pad because that's all we had. Now with computers, I can tell you that it is gone way beyond an art, and it is now a precise science where you can pick particular voters and particular households and move them in and out of districts because you don't want somebody who might run for office to be in your district, or because you need to move a few households in order to be sure that you get reelected. And that's just not the way democracy ought to work.
You're listening to Coastline. Frank from Hampstead, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This is a particularly important issue to me. I've attended public hearings in the Wilmington, North Carolina area and spoken about this subject. And I've attended rallies against gerrymandering over in Raleigh. And I know, to me, it's the most important issue facing America today. Our faith in democracy is at stake right now. But gerrymandering is really simply about power. It's holding on to power. I know that the North Carolina legislature has resisted attempts at redrawing the district lines over and over again. How much faith can we put, even when a three-judge panel tells the North Carolina legislature to redraw the maps? If they're going to be in charge of redrawing the maps, how can we trust the new maps to come out fairly? Or are the new maps going to be done by a nonpartisan group, which is what I think most people want? I'm hoping that when the maps do get redrawn, we have some nonpartisanship that is going to be taking control of that process.
Frank,
can you address that issue?
Yeah. Sure, happy to. I mean, there are states now that have commissions that do the map drawing. To me, the real key is what are the rules? And if you have a system that prohibits the use of voting history and prohibits the use of how people are registered in drawing districts, that dramatically reduces the ability to do gerrymandering. It's even better, in my view, if the process is transparent, if it's done by a group of people who are bipartisan. I think that will enhance the trust that the public has in the way it's done. But to me, the real key, first of all, is to have rules that will prohibit partisan gerrymandering and that will do this in a transparent way. Because I think if you do it in a transparent way where the public can see what's happening, their confidence in the outcome will be much higher.
Tom Ross, you engaged in that experiment with 10 retired judges, 5 who ran for office as Democrats and 5 who ran as Republicans. And that worked out even from a mathematical point of view, according to Jonathan Mattingly at Duke. The election law blog about this case, North Carolina's case, says, as the court explained, North Carolina Representative Lewis, the person who drew the maps for the state house, said that he proposed the committee draw the maps to give a partisan advantage to 10 Republicans and 3 Democrats because he did not believe it would be possible to draw a map with 11 Republicans and 2 Democrats. If there's a case that could be a partisan gerrymander, it's this one, according to
the others. When David Lewis said that, he was saying it in the context of a challenge to them of being racial gerrymandering, and he was saying it in a context in which, frankly, partisan gerrymandering was an accepted part of redistricting processes. There really hadn't been many challenges to
right.
it. But I think it is strong evidence that was the intention, to be as partisan as possible. And so now we face the question in this country of whether that is unconstitutional. And that is what our Supreme Court will have to decide from the cases before it. It is what the 3-judge panel confronted in North Carolina, and they found that it was unconstitutional. So where this all will play out over the next few months is going to be fascinating, but it's also going to be critical to the future of this country, I promise you.
We've gotten a couple of email comments from people who echo Mary's sentiments here. Mary writes, "Forgive my cynicism, but I don't see why politicians should have the power to carve up districts. They're drunk on power and fulfilling their own desires. Nothing is about their constituents. Also, forgive me for this, but I must remind listeners that voting in this country is not a right everyone enjoys. Minority voters are suppressed." She says Republicans suppress them to maintain a stranglehold on their power. Voter purging and voter IDs are 2 ways to keep minorities from voting for Democrats. Tom Ross, just a couple of minutes left. Tell us about the states that have successfully engaged in nonpartisan redistricting reform. What are some of those models?
Yeah, I don't know that I can that I will classify them as successes, because I think that's up to the public to determine. I can tell you states that are doing this now in different ways, and California certainly is. Arizona now is. Washington State is. Kansas, for a long time, has had an advisory commission that draws on a nonpartisan basis. So there are states that are doing this and doing it effectively and, I think, successfully. It can be done both with a commission and without a commission. You know, the Arizona model actually went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said you can have an independent commission that draws these districts, and it doesn't have to go back to the legislature. The legislature can delegate this responsibility. That's the first time the courts have ever allowed that. So there are ways to do it, and to do it better than we're doing it in North Carolina, and I think we as citizens got to figure out the best way and get that passed in this state so that we can solve the problem of partisan gerrymandering.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Tom Ross, what a pleasure and an honor having you with us today. Thank you.
You're kind, Rachel. It's an honor to be with you.
You can hear Tom Ross speak tonight, January 18th, at Lumina Theater on the UNCW campus at 6:30 this evening. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production assistant and today's chief engineer, Caitlin Hanrahan. Caroline DeVries is our webmaster. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org, get the podcast, or find it on the WHQR app. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.